Hey, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, I'm going to play Saxon Jacks. I'm tomorrow, Ricky on the board. S&P futures up a little bit. And NASDAQ is up at 15. S&P's up 8, so we're positive here. We got oil up $2, but still under 100 at 98.32, because it was down quite a bit the last couple of days. Evidently, peace talks are progressing some. Loggerheads, obviously, are the nuclear thing, and Iran still wants to charge tolls in the Strait of Hormuz. I don't know how that's going to work, but somehow Turkey does it in the Bosphorus, but I don't know how they get away with it. But anyway, it's Iran, I believe. Do we have Professor Kevin?
You have me this morning. Good morning.
I think the Strait of Hormuz at its narrowest point is 21 miles wide. And I guess in international waters, you're supposed to get 12 miles. So really, Iran only has 12 of it, and whoever the guys are on the other side is it? Was it Yemen? I'm not sure who's on the other side. I don't see why, even if they
Oman.
So I mean, I don't know how they would get to charge tolls on those guys' side, and I don't think they're planning on splitting them. Very bizarre situation, the whole thing. But anywho, that's where that all is. But the market's up a little bit. Interesting conversation yesterday. Oh, by the way, I was kidding Ricky before he should try Farm Girl Match. You know, you got all these different matching sites. He could end up with some huge big farm if he met some girl on there. And we could all become like gentleman farmers or something.
Ricky, you gonna go for that?
Hell yeah.
I said, can you grow anything? And if the old man asks you, what are a farmer? Just tell him you have the best crop of dandelions in the neighborhood. That's farming, right?
Yes.
Well, you know, you can eat dandelions. They're actually supposedly pretty good. I see them in the stores. I don't know.
Actually, they make dandelion wine, too.
Yeah. Actually, my grandfather used to pick them. He said, you got to pick them before the flower. Whatever. My grandfather was big into farming, even though he was a boilermaker. But all old Italian dudes know how to farm. So.
Stocks and Jocks Matchmaker app is going to feature farm girls for Ricky.
Yeah. Well, they did.
I'm cool with that.
You know, if it's a big, huge bed and breakfast and all kinds of stuff and a real nice place to go out and watch games and stuff, we might go out and visit. What do you think?
Works for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
And you know, we're all about Ricky's happiness anyway. So.
Oh, yeah, well, Ricky's a good dude. By the way, I had an interesting conversation yesterday. Talk about anecdotal crap. Nobody wants to get into the whole story about my...
That would be a good name for a rock band, wouldn't it? Like anecdotal crap.
Yeah. Well, I have, everybody knows, because I talk about it, I had a Suburban with a 42-gallon tank. Finally, the Suburban gives up, right? And I traded for an extended cab pickup, which is fine, except the thing's a little too big. It's bigger than the Suburban. In the back seat, let's just say the people I carry around are too spatially challenged to get in that back seat. I'm not going to say too fat, but too spatially challenged. So it really doesn't do me any good. So if I could find another Suburban or one of those Avalanches or something, I'd probably trade it. So I see one in, like, Central Illinois. In really good shape, and you know, I figured maybe I'll just drive down there and make the trade, give the guy a couple grand or a few grand, and then be happy. And all the people can get in the back seat and aren't complaining. So I call the guy up, and he goes, "Oh yeah, things in really nice shape." Blah blah blah. I said, "Well, how about if I drive down and we talk about a trade?" He goes, "Oh no, I don't want any trades." What do you mean, don't want any trades? Your used car lot? He goes, "The economy around here is cratering. The last thing I need is another car in a lot." I did not expect to hear that. I'm surprised. I mean, it's kind of in a college town. I'm, Is are we having pockets where stuff is really bad here or what? I can't tell from in Chicago. What do you guys say?
It depends on the town and it depends on the college, because there are a whole lot of small colleges closing. It seems like there's a weekly announcement about that. They are just not able to maintain enrollment, so you may have some issues there. And it also depends on the town and what other kinds of industries do they have. So, I imagine there are a lot of small towns that get dependent on a single industry. And if that industry isn't doing well, that's going to be a problem.
Well, the town of Champaign, Illinois is not closing that I know of.
Actually, that should be a really good research area. And honestly, I don't know much, if anything, about Champaign, because I haven't paid any attention. I know, over here, the major college towns, Bloomington and Lafayette, are doing really well. Lafayette's got a really strong manufacturing base in its area. So, I don't know what Champaign has.
I was really shocked, actually.
Knowing the way the state of Illinois is run, I'm guessing it could be a missed opportunity.
Well, it could very well. I did find out when I bought the Suburban. I mean, I think everybody's figured out by now that everything I do, I use as a opportunity to learn. So I was driving. I bought it in Grand Falls, Michigan. Is it Grand Falls? It's inside a little bit, just past Ben Harbor. I don't know, whatever, something. There's a falls up there.
That Grand Rapids.
Grand Rapids, yeah. It was Grand Rapids. And so,
past Benton Harbor, but it's past Benton.
Yeah, so I go up there, and I kind of like the truck. I'm going to go back and get it because there's something wrong with the brakes thing. Anyway, long story. So I call the guy, and he goes, well, you know what? I'm not open on Saturday, but if you're coming from Chicago, I'll just meet you there on a Saturday, and we'll trade cars. I go, okay. So I go up, and of course, I sit down and have this long conversation with the dude. If ever anybody knows what's going on in an area, it's the used car dealer, because the guy sees everybody's stuff. He's getting everybody's loans, and I'd driven through the town, and I see there was some kind of a concert going on, so I had to go through these on a regular, residential streets, and I'm noticing all the houses, and I'm going, these things are all kept up really well, but wow, look, everybody looks like they need a new roof, and some of the windows look a little weak. So I said to the guy, what's going on in this area? And he says, well, we used to do furniture up here. And everybody was making, this is how the Suburban was 12, 13 years ago. And everybody used to make 30, 35 bucks an hour. All that left, went overseas, went someplace, which Carl probably knows where it went more than we do. And everybody's like out of a job. He says, but now everybody's kind of back to work, and there's new industries here, but the new wages are 20 to 25. And it's 5 years later. So exactly what you see is what's going on. Everybody can keep the grass cut and feed the family, sort of, but nobody's getting a new roof. Nobody's getting new windows. And you see the cars on the lot. I don't have any expensive cars out here because nobody can afford them. And it is amazing how certain people like that have their finger on the pulse of the area, don't they? I mean, I just wonder what the real story is around the country right now. I get the feeling that in farm communities, things are not doing so hot, but we don't really have. We have some clients at PTI that are pretty good size farmers, and those guys are okay because last year they ordered their seed and their fertilizer, everything in advance, got it. I'm gonna say probably delivered. Where we were in May, almost June, probably got it delivered last October or September, and they, I don't know, the price of corn and soybeans isn't up that high, but I think they're going to have an okay year, probably not their best. They claim if you didn't do that, if you tried to buy stuff late, then you got a problem. And there's some people that aren't planning. But it's really hard to get a feel for all this, isn't it? I mean, I don't know how the government probably tries to, or some people try to. I wonder if they really try to. But how do you even know how people are doing, really? Kind of a bug.
You hang out with people, and then you get a pretty good idea how they're doing.
Well, I mean, it's not like you and I can go out for a beer in Central Iowa tonight and start talking to people. I mean, I wonder if there's a difference between the big farms and the small farms. I mean, maybe not.
I pay a lot more attention to manufacturing than I do to farming. So I'd like to tell you that because I live where I live and there's so much farming and And you know, fruit farming in Southwest Michigan, I know, is staying is pretty damn busy. But I, you know, the normal, the, you know, the corn, soybeans, etc. I really, you know, I probably should be more tapped into it just based on being right where I am, but I'm not. So I, you know, I don't have a good comment about that. I tend to pay more attention to manufacturing activity.
Oh, and I pay attention to the markets, which is you know, why a lot of people watch the show. But it's also fairly narrow, right? I mean, the market could be doing great and everybody doing lousy, right? Yeah. I mean, you hope not.
So what I try not to do is make the assumption that just because of what I observe is, you know, is doing well or is doing poorly, that's a good assessment of what is going on everywhere, because I'm just not that tapped into everywhere.
Talked a little bit with Lou yesterday, out of all people, very concerned with what's going on with this, I don't know what you call it, a rush or a change in the idea that, you know, government is all part of business. And, you know, in terms of we're investing money, first of all, I don't know who the hell the we is. I don't see Congress passing the cash for something, so I don't know taking it from. Yesterday I walk in and IBM's up $29. I mean, what the hell is IBM doing up $29? Oh, they gave them $1 billion. They're going to do something with them, and they're going to take a piece of IBM. Since when is this America? I don't get this. I mean, do you? I know you're more into this administration than me, Kevin. But is this your view of America? I don't. It's not mine.
We've taken equity positions on at bailouts, related to bailouts, in the past. So, you know, we know it's been done before. But it is a model, and I've heard Bessent talk about it. They encourage it. They're saying if we're going to do any subsidization, then there should be a payback on it. So I get the line of thought. Not what I would do, but at least it's not completely devoid of any thought process.
Well, the other, when you talk about the bailouts, the whole idea was those companies repaid the government and got the bailout done as fast as possible. It's kind of a different model totally.
I'm not sure it is.
Well, Chrysler paid them back. GM's, the government sold the stock, right?
Is that the deal now? Not the deal now, or you don't know?
Nobody's mentioning the being out, and we also have people in the administration seemingly trading ahead of it, which is another problem to me. I mean, how does a competitor to IBM who doesn't kiss the mistletoe and get the investment, how do they compete?
That's a problem, isn't it?
I mean, these are things that I don't really have that much of an issue, really, if it was done properly with, like, steel companies and so forth, but I come at it from like a different end of this thing, and I don't. Let's take U.S. Steel for instance. You know, when Trump ran the first time, and this is not just him, when Trump ran the first time, it was we got to keep these steel companies here, and blah blah blah. And U.S. Steel has been somewhat remarkable or unremarkable, whatever you want to call it, in a sense that they stuck with their old line. Just a real brief history of this. The U.S. steel industry was pretty much all open hearth way back in the day. Now, there's other kinds of ways you make steel now that are more efficient, but guess what? An open hearth furnace basically never wears out. So to go from one to the other is like a real lot of dough to just say, I'm not doing that anymore. So U.S. steel was kind of doing their stuff. You know, when Trump came in, and he, you know, other people have done the same thing with this. You know, we got to save these basic industries, and clearly, if you're going to have a navy, you got to have a place where you can order steel, right? I mean, duh. So I'm not the whole logic of it. I'm not all against, but then we had Bob on our steel expert on the one day, and he goes, "We don't need U.S. Steel. There's all kinds of other companies. If they went out for bid for the bow of a ship, there'd be four or five people that would make it for them. I mean, we don't need to save that company just because they have the name U.S. Steel on them." So now all of a sudden, these guys have essentially, you know, shellacked or whatever you want to call it, any investment over 40 years. Who knows if the guys working there took it. I know some of these firms totally screwed people on pension. And now all of a sudden, Now, they're going to get this big investment from somebody. And it was from a foreign place, and then the U.S. get a piece, some story. And where Trump controls 20% of the stock there? What do we need to do that for? I mean, if there's other places, what's the point? Now, the other places, you know, they're pissing up a rope trying to chase a guy who's got a bunch of money. I mean, every time you do something like this, Kevin, it seems like we're not into competition, are we? Or something. Now, if they were the only place left, you know, and it was Chrysler going under and you helped them out for a year, I guess I could roll with that. But what are we doing? Is there a model? Is there some sort of principle behind what we're doing other than we're grabbing it, I'm grabbing it, and, you know, if they contribute to my campaign, I'm in? I mean, it seems so scattered to me. Or am I just being critical?
Both.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I've said this before on right here on Stocks and Jocks that this is intentional. They're reshaping the way the economy is structured and trade in the world, and for better or for worse. And I don't know if it's going to be part for better, part for worse, all for worse, other than we just sure as hell can't afford the way we're spending right now. It's happening. It's intentional, and sit back, make your popcorn, sit back, because you're not going to be able to change it.
Well, I'm not so sure we looted them yesterday. Where do you get? We are going to give, you know, from the Oval Office, IBM $1 billion. Where does that come from? Where does that check come? Who gets to sign it? I mean, it's not any part of any bill that Congress passed. Last time I checked, the House had the power to purse, right? Where does it come? Where is there a slush fund of $1 billion you can just lob off to somebody you want after you maybe bought stock in there the day before? I mean, how do you get to do that? Where does it come from?
Well, Tom, if you're asking me to know that off the top of my head, you're going to be disappointed.
Yeah, me too. I think I heard yesterday the money was coming from part of the infrastructure bill that hasn't been spent yet. Which leads me to another question, which that's kind of what
I... question, you got the answer.
Well, I'm saying, but that leads me to a Kevin question, because you're always big on how do you monitor this money? How does it... I mean, Wayne was talking yesterday that the CIA had little pieces of dough in the the TVA and things like that. What bank do you put that money in? I'm a goofball when it comes to details on this crap, because that's what I do. How does that go to some bank, someplace, and Kevin O'Neill gets to be a signature on the check someplace in Tennessee that goes to the CIA? How do you even pull that off? I mean, right? I mean, I don't know how you do that.
But that's just mechanics, Tom.
You're a bank guy, so I mean, here's a bill for $30 billion for the Tennessee Valley Authority. By the way, $400 million of them is really gonna be CIA money. So we're gonna put this in the First Bank in Knoxville, somehow get it there, and we're gonna say that Kevin and Carl and Chief can sign for these checks. I just wonder how that even works.
Well, normally for a business account, depending on the business structure, and this would be a business account of some sort, it's not somebody's personal account, there would be some kind of authority granted depending on the business structure. So if it's a sole proprietorship, then the proprietor, you know, you have your whether it's an incorporation, a partnership, or whatever. The legal documents get filed with the bank so that the bank knows who is legally allowed to sign, and then whoever has the authority can designate. In a typical corporation, that would be that authority would rest with the board of directors to designate a signer, who might be like the CFO, and then the controller as a backup for it. So there would be a corporate resolution for that, and the corporate resolution would be filed with the bank. But all those kinds of documents, depending on the business structure, and I, you know, I, There are government accounts too, so whatever the government entity is, whoever is responsible for it would designate who can sign for, who can sign a check, who can initiate a wire transfer, all those kinds of things. That's what's going to happen with it. So there's process behind that.
So there's
all kinds of compliance that goes into that.
So it's probably a front corporation of some kind.
Yeah, it could very well be.
Interesting. Hey, what did you? One of the reasons why I like having you on Friday is we kind of review some of the stuff that other people said during the week. I mean, Carl is making some comments, and he's on, but
Carl, you can jump in any time on any of this stuff, too. You ain't infringed it on my brilliance.
Well, I mean, the question was, when you take this big court case between Musk and this, was it OpenAI, the idea that it was originally some sort of a, I won't say a charity, but a not-for-profit or a non-profit or something, and now they want to take it essentially public. And the people who are in charge now, whether or not they're going to end up with a bunch of stock or something, and that's what happened with the CBOE and the Board of Trade, which I thought really sucked, to be honest with you, but that's another story. And the people who worked essentially for the not-for-profit ended up with a lot of the ownership, which I think, in Carl's view, would have been illegal, but it happened. So this place is going to come public, or at least I think they are. Because Musk, he's appealing, so maybe he can still stop it. I don't know. But what happens now didn't one of the schools already sell their athletic department, or was thinking about selling 20% of the athletic department to private capital? How the hell is that going to work, Kevin? I mean, and plus, kind of a two-tiered question. Our guys are going back and forth. Our Notre Dame buddies were talking about the lacrosse team and how they're winning. And they actually are really good. They're playing this weekend. And they've won twice the national championship in the last 3 or 4 years. I mean, they've got a really good program. And one of our guys said something, well, we hope we're paying these guys enough. And I go, wait a minute. If you're taking a business model, they don't get paid squat. You're not making any money. I mean, how do you tell the, I'll use the term BlackRock, even though those guys are maybe not the people, if they buy 20% of the Notre Dame athletic department or football team, which is probably all they really care about, maybe girls basketball, but the guys, why, how do you get to tell them you got to pay for the women's swimming team and the guys fencing team or something? They don't want any part of that. I mean, once you go down this road, how do you do half business and half not business?
If you're negotiating a deal and you want them to fund other athletics, and remember they still have their Title IX compliance issues that they have to deal with those. So, if you want that to be part of the deal, then, and you have enough bargaining power, then you say, if you want Notre Dame football, then you are going to fund other Notre Dame sports. Take it or shove it. Whether that's going to work out or not, who knows? But from the private, the investor standpoint, you're saying, is it worth it for me or not? Basically, it's paying a premium by funding all of these other sports.
I
don't think that's genius material. That's just negotiation.
Kevin. I would love to agree with you, but I've seen it too many times. It's, don't worry, we're going to give somebody a DPM, but he can't sell it. Don't worry, we're having casinos, but they're all going to be on boats, and if we don't want them, we can all just ship them down the river. None of that lasts. All anybody cares about is a football team. And the other stuff is, maybe for 10 years you put some frosting on the cake, but it's not a 40-year solution that somebody has to fund lacrosse.
Well, I don't think there's anything that anybody is doing now that is close to a long-term solution, so I don't see why this would be any different.
Well, here, all right, so, Chief, what you're really describing, and Kevin, I think you'd probably agree if you think about it for a minute or two, is the Soviet Union.
Well, yeah, well.
I mean, if you think about where this goes, right, the government comes in and says, well, we're going to take an equity position in IBM. Okay, so now IBM has, now here's the difference. Where did the government get the stock from? Because, Chief, as you know, Kevin, as you know, but as most people who are listening probably don't know, and in fact, 1% of the people I hang out with know this until I point it out to them. Unless you buy an IPO or a secondary offering, the company doesn't get any of the money. So if I buy IBM today, if I put an order in right now, pre-market, to buy IBM, IBM doesn't get any of that cash. Whoever currently owns it gets it.
Yeah, so IBM's got to pay it out of Treasury.
Well, they might have.
No, that's assuming they have Treasury shares.
Right.
They own Treasury stock to do it.
Right. Well, maybe they do it, maybe they don't. But if those trades take place on an exchange, IBM doesn't get any of that money.
Correct.
Well, the U.S. Steel part, the people who took, it was a Japanese company took over U.S. Steel, and the government got part of that stock, right?
Well, this is the thing, is these kinds of convoluted structures. It sounds like when these things happen, that essentially, it sounds kind of like the Soviet model in that, okay, we've decreed by government fiat that U.S. Steel is the best producer of steel in the United States, therefore we're buying up U.S. Steel, okay, essentially, right? Now, the problem with this is capitalism works because the market figures out who the best guy is, and the best guy gets more of the orders and more of the money, and by the way, it's supposed to be better, faster, cheaper, pick any two. My motto was you don't got to choose, you can have all three, and you try to deliver on that if you're a capitalist, because that's how you make money. But now all of a sudden, it's not that. Now it's I own, Donald J. Trump, just bought a crap ton of NVIDIA stock. Now I'm going to pump NVIDIA by putting their chairman on my plane and flying over to China. Okay.
Well, actually, I think the model is more, it's not the Soviet model, it's the...
I'll say
the German model, because...
I'm saying it sounds like the Soviet model, but in truth it is not. It's the I pocket all the money because I'm the leader.
But it has nothing to do with concentration craps or anything. It's the fascist economic system. I'm talking about Mussolini. It's two or three companies in every industry with their nose firmly up the ass of government.
It's fascism, essentially.
But when I say that, I'm not talking about 1933. I went to Germany and was doing some lecturing in these banks in 1991, for God's sake. And I'm looking around, I go, God, I hope we never get like this. Every industry, the banks own the stock in a lot of the industries, which we don't do here, thankfully, at least we don't have until now. The banks own the stock. They were so powerful. These banks, they own 40, 50% of the shares of half the... And there were probably only three people that made bullets and three people that made this. And they were so tied in with the banks and the government, you couldn't pull them apart. It was like noses were up everybody's ass.
Yeah, and that is a bad thing.
The problem with it is, it's a bad thing on a number of accounts. But one of the logical arguments and one of the arguments made on behalf of it is, we have this very large company, and it needs to thrive, and it's important to. The national economy, maybe you call it, national security, whatever justification you're going to give it. And so you basically pump up that company, and that company does indeed, you keep some jobs here, you do a whole bunch of things like that. But you ensure that somebody who has not been competitive, internationally, you ensure their continued existence as a non-competitive company when competitors could emerge, and so on. If you want to do some things with trade to encourage more competitive companies to set up shop in the United States, I would much prefer that approach to doing something. And we've done a certain amount of that, but I would much or that approach to saying, let's prop up a company that should be doing better but isn't.
Well, and but some of that doesn't work too, Kevin, all right? So, like, you know, one of the things that was pushed very hard during Trump's first term and crowed about was TSMC putting a fab here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, TSMC put the fab here in the United States. They essentially got bribed to do it, all right? And the argument was national security, which, by the way, has a pretty decent amount of validity, too. That's not a load of crap, because if you can't make semiconductors within your borders and a war breaks out and your supply chain gets cut out, you got big problems, okay? Because pretty much everything these days requires semiconductors. So that's, you know, the basic argument is solid, all right? The problem is they put the fab up. And I've seen some statistics out of this now, and it's pretty alarming. The yield that they're getting on the small nanometer wafers, which is, of course, all the modern stuff.
Carl, is this the one in Phoenix?
Yes. The yield... So modern semiconductors are all very tiny. The actual cell within the semiconductor is very, very small. Okay, and that's one of the advances that's come over time, is that the size of that has gone down, therefore you get more transistors on a chip, et cetera, et cetera. The problem is the yields they're getting out of this plant are about half of what they're getting out of the ones in Taiwan.
Well, why is now, that? Do you have any idea?
Well, seeing it's the same company, therefore the same expertise, the presumption has to be that it's the quality of the workforce that are running it over here. Because otherwise, you'd be getting the same results because it's the same people.
Well, that's one possibility. Maybe they didn't give us their highest and best processes.
Well, it's possible that they did that on purpose, Chief. That's certainly true.
Yeah, sound like that would be in TSMC's interest.
It would not be in TSMC's interest to put up billions of dollars worth of stuff and then essentially produce trash, right? Now, the reality is that they are getting chips. The problem is their cost, because of it's not that they're not able to make them. It's that the yields on the wafers, the ones that actually pass inspection and work, are, you know, it's half of what they're getting over there.
Okay.
Well, that's a problem.
Yeah,
because now all of a sudden
I'm curious as to why that is, but
it's a problem though, because now essentially the chip that's made here in the United States costs twice as much. Before you get into the whole thing about slave labor and, you know, environmental arbitrage and all this, just generally on yield, if I have a wafer that has 100 chips on it and only 50 of them are good, but over there 100 of them are good, the ones over here cost twice as much to make.
Well, I mean,
how much of that is hiring restrictions and guidelines that were imposed as part of the CHIPS Act?
Kevin, I don't know, but
that I'm just asking.
Well, I do not know, but what, you know, there's an intertwining of all these things related to labor and the offshoring and backdooring thereof. You can take a look at the patterns over the last couple of years, and there is some attention being paid to this now, not nearly enough, where you have company A goes out, Amazon being an example, goes out and fires 10,000 Americans and yet hires 10,000 H-1Bs. Okay, now if in fact Amazon has too many employees, too much labor relative to their demand for labor internally, it needs to fire 10,000 people. Okay, that's, you know, that's capitalism, right?
Right. When an H-1B, those aren't the people that come here on a visa to come to one company, are they?
Yes, they are, which makes it even worse. And then
it makes them a slave.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And then the other problem you have with this is if you take a look at all these large tech companies, the percentage of them that have people in these roles that are, shall we say, in class preference with where they're getting these H1s from is a near 100% correlation.
All right, you got to back up a bit here. I think we've talked about this on the show, Kevin and I have, several times, and it seems to me, Kevin, that the people we're talking about, I mean, in general, this is my perception, that's why I'm asking Carl this, people we're talking about are people that went to Stanford, you know, Caltech and those kinds of places, don't, from China, the people in Silicon Valley see the knowledge, they get these guys back on one of these visas, and the person has to work for one company for, say, $80,000. Where if the place down the street offers him $100,000, he can't go. He's essentially an indentured servant to the first place. But the people, Amazon in this area, Carl,
there's a pathway to going, but it is very time consuming, long lead time. It's discouraging. It's not going to encourage movement.
But I'm saying the Amazon people here, Carl, that I know about, because Audrey's friend worked there, it's a big distribution center, and nobody's kind of making spot, and they make you work real hard.
No, I'm not talking about...
Okay, you're not talking about that. Yeah.
Distribution center is grunt work.
That's blue-collar shovel packages and boxes.
Yep. So we're not talking about any of that stuff. We're talking about...
What I'm talking about is things like, for example, Microsoft... you take a look at them, you take a look at Google, the people in those executive positions are Indian.
Okay.
Dot, not feather, okay? They are bringing in, at the same time they're firing 10,000 Americans, they're bringing in 10,000 Indian H-1Bs.
I'm not suggesting
this. That's illegal.
I know. Okay, but what I'm saying is, just so everybody knows, and I'm not suggesting this, if you brought them in and said, you're now a citizen and not an H-1B, they could go get a job for more money because somebody else could hire them.
Well, except the problem here, Chief, is exactly the same thing as what many people have claimed, and in some cases they haven't been lying, okay? I'm a white guy, I'm an executive, I ain't hiring any black people.
Okay.
The same thing goes on within these tech companies, and you take the percentage of people in this country who are of Indian descent and are not citizens, okay, they're here on these visas. What has happened here is these companies have flooded their employment with in-group preference. Now that is supposed
to be also flooding people for $80,000 when the going rate's $100,000.
Well, duh.
Yeah.
You can say this is a racist thing, but the truth is, it's a dollar thing,
without a doubt.
All right. And oh, by the way,
well, slavery wasn't a racist thing; it was a good deal.
Okay.
Well, it probably was a racist thing too, but still.
Well, one of the reasons that there was a war over it was because this thing called a tractor was invented, okay? Yeah. And all of a sudden, there's a threat just on the money to doing it that way. Now, was that the whole reason? No, but it was certainly part of it. All right, is it now all of a sudden we got to come up with some way to protect an artificially defective economic decision because the economics have just been changed?
But the thing we're talking about, and what Kevin and I started talking about, is once you get away from this competitive model, and this is the thing, this is not, it's not necessarily, it can be a right or left argument depending on who the hell's in office, but
right.
when people talk about, this is capitalism, this is this, all the stuff we're talking about is kind of carve out some capitalism, wouldn't you say? It's certainly not free capitalism. It's some sort of crony bullshit capitalism.
It's not capitalism at all, because let's say, essentially what this is indentured servitude. This goes back to essentially what the Barbary pirates were doing, which is, we're going to seize your ship, and oh, by the way, now you're a slave. I thought that America, one of the first things that America as a nation did was send our Navy over there in sailing ships, which was more than a little dangerous having to cross the Atlantic Ocean. It wasn't our guys that were being seized. It was mostly Europeans. that were being grabbed. So we didn't even do it for our own self-interest. We did it just because it was BS and we weren't going
to
let it go.
Well, we also
wanted
to show people we had some power.
Well, I understand that, but yeah. I'm saying, but the beneficiaries of that were not really the United States, okay? The beneficiaries of that were, for the most part, Europeans who were the ones that were having their ships seized and sunk and, you know, impressed into essentially slavery. But the problem with it now is that we have this incorrect belief that somehow setting foot on American soil changes who you are, and that the dirt here that comprises this land is magical. Okay? It is not. If you come over here and you are, your indoctrination is that of a caste system, you're best, everybody else is crap. By the way, half of the people in your country quite literally crap in the road.
Okay, yeah,
that's not hyperbole, and it's not a racial slur. It's the truth. And you are at the top of this heap. You're essentially a king within that society, and you come over here, you're all of a sudden going to be egalitarian, and you're going to hire people purely on merit. The hell you are!
Okay. Well, I mean, everybody wants a carve out from the system.
Right.
I mean, that's, well, and that's,
of course.
But our mentality ought to be that's what we guard against. And yet we have not just this administration has decided, let's just go full bore on this. I mean, but it's happened all along the way. I mean, there always were people that had, a little bit of edge on somebody else, and that's part of it. But I never really thought.
Tom, what do you think the entire. Just take, and we can probably come up with five more examples of this, but what was the climate agenda all about? Because whatever the hell it was, we've spent, I don't know how many trillion dollars and not moved the needle at all, because the same people who've been telling us that we have been, that we're about to die as a planet, have been telling us that for decades. So everything we've done for decades hasn't moved the needle.
We're all supposed to be dead in four more years, Kevin.
Well, Kevin, that I'm not above.
Bring that up.
You want to bring that up.
Let me finish the thought. That's funneled a whole hell of a lot of money in a lot of different directions to a lot of people, some through non-government, some just through preferred industries. We've been doing this for a long time. And you can pick any other agenda that you want, whether it's military, whether it's related to foreign policy. You can come up with all kinds of applications about this. It's not new. It's a huge problem. And you say when, you know, we want to guard against it. Yeah, we do, but we've stopped guarding against that. That ship sailed
along. Here's where you and I 99% agree. The 1% disagree. I think you and I have all the things, you've been on the show forever, and we've been friends forever, all the things we agree upon, I don't like any of that crap. It's one thing to say, going forward, if we can, use our heads, and if there's some places where we can have renewable energy and so forth, I mean, for God's sake, I drove through northern Arizona. If we can't find a way to harness some wind and solar out there, is my truck is getting buffeted with wind and the air conditioner is on high, we're idiots. I mean, so should there be some semblance of sanity in using some of the stuff? The answer is yes. But you're never going to find anybody who's with you more that said, wait a minute, are we going to go and now decide we can't use diesel in the desert? And by the way, some guy who's got some schlock solar farm, we're going to give him $2 million just because we like him. I was never for that. You know that. But on the same token, some of the stuff that is huge, and it's very rare, I'm going to say, you talk about the TVA, you talk about Hoover Dam, you talk about Grand Coulee Dam, maybe some of the original nuclear facilities that were supposed to last 20 years, and I suspect at the time they weren't that good of an investment. And I don't know that government put money in there or not. Well, they probably did by letting people charge too much for electric. So it got in there somehow. They're now 60 years old, and they're still pumping stuff out. So I'm not
right.
So on some level, a very narrow level, Kevin, I agree with you, some of this investment makes some sort of sense. But it's not the same as we think that everybody should get rid of their gas lawnmower. By the way, we're going to invest in my brother-in-law's electric lawnmower company. You know, I was never involved. I never. And you're right. It's gone before. The problem I have is because Carter did it, because this other guy did it, you don't get to even up. It needs to stop today. Who's ever in office?
I agree with you, but you know, now you're talking about entrenched bureaucracy that is built around this, and you know, try to make an entrenched bureaucracy go away. It's hard for me to say those words together, but
yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, why are we all agreeing today? What's this? Is this because of the holiday or what?
Operation. You know, when you have a department that exists and it doesn't do anything worthwhile, but try and make it go away, that ain't happening.
But how do you delineate if we agree with sort of agree with what I just said, and you think that in some areas it makes total sense, for instance, to have some solar, to have some whatever. I don't want to say it again, but I will real briefly. If you ever go out to Hoover Dam, look, what direction is it? Look to the southwest. You'll see a flat valley there. It's got to be as flat as your driveway for as far as the eye can see. Why there isn't 5,000 solar panels on that damn thing with all the lines right in there for the dam, I have no idea. Yet people are putting them on their house in Wisconsin. But what are we doing? Do we have any sense whatsoever?
Well, okay. Careful here, Chief. And this is, I've brought this up before, but what you're talking about sounds like it makes a lot of sense. Okay?
Well, if it doesn't make sense there, it doesn't make sense anywhere.
Well, you're right. It doesn't make sense anywhere. And here is the reason it doesn't make sense anywhere. You have to have behind every unit of production of renewables, you must have a reliable source if you're going to use it as something other than peaking power. All right? Now, people don't understand how this works, but this is a fact of power system engineering. I don't care whether people like it or not. You can be all the green you want. You're not going to change these facts. A large, thermally massive plant, whether it's coal-fired or nuclear, I mean, nuclear is just a big tea kettle. That's all it is. It's the same thing as a coal-fired plant. It's just that there's a nuclear reactor instead of burning coal. A thermally large plant cannot load follow, cannot change its output rapidly. It just can't, because you have all this thermal mass that is at an elevated temperature. All right? It doesn't go away rapidly if you turn it off or you turn it down. So if you have more production than there is demand, the cost, the price in the market for that power actually can go negative. In other words, you're paying people to take it because the alternative is the plant trips.
It was like electricity at night in Chicago.
Yes. You actually can end up in a situation where the plant trips offline because it produces more energy than can be absorbed by the grid. And if it does that, it will go out of spec on either voltage or frequency, and it trips offline. Okay, now that is a very bad thing. So you have a stability, a grid stability problem here. If you put a bunch of solar out there and you invade the base load component, in other words, you go beyond the peaking demand, and you allow that solar generation to invade baseload, you're going to invade it far enough.
Well,
that
I'm not saying you don't need higher capacity. My point is, in that part of the world, since we now have, I don't know how we got off on this topic, but in that part of the world, because you now have, when I started going to Vegas, I'm going to say in the 70s, the entire population of Nevada was less than 1 million people. That wasn't that long ago. Well, right now, where do you think the peak loads are in Phoenix, Las Vegas, and everything on electricity? It's during the middle of the day when the sun is out.
Well,
everybody's got their air conditioner on.
I agree, and I have, as I said, I have absolutely no quarrel with this, provided that you positively blackball any attempt to invade baseload.
I'm with you on that, without a doubt.
And you have to, but you have to do it as a matter of law, because if you don't, what's going to end up happening is exactly what is happening.
which is a destabilization of the grid. And that is a serious problem. That is not something
happen. Kevin, when I used to go out there with our guys, by the way, one of the most fun trips I ever made was the late Bill Moriarty, our friend of the show that died a few weeks ago. Civil engineer, I went to Hoover Dam with him. God, was that educational. Him telling me how this was done and that was done, and how he goes, I've never seen concrete work like this. He goes, I've been all around the country doing projects. This concrete work, this is not craftsmanship. This is art. This is perfect. Yeah. Anyway, but in those days, one of the guys who ran one of the casinos, you know, I always bullshit with everybody. This is 1977, 8. He said the electric bill in the summertime per month for one of those places, and they're probably, what would you guess, Kevin, a fifth the size of a place now, was $300,000. Yeah. What do you suppose it is now for like one of those big, huge joints?
God. You can't imagine it. It's funny because I'm a pinball collector, okay? So I've got five tables in my basement. Those things.
Proper music. We got to put Ricky. You got to put Pinball Wizard on. But yep. Keep going.
There you go. So these things, you know, they all plug into the wall.
You don't put blinders on, do you?
Well, no.
Okay.
But you know, they all plug into the wall. Okay. And every one of them, when they're on, they draw 3 or 4 amps.
Well, how many watts is it?
Well, 300 watts.
Really? So like 300 watt bulbs? I would guess that. Yeah.
Well, that's just, I mean, you know, because it's full of electronics.
Yep.
Okay. Now the electromechanical games actually can draw more, the older ones. But you know, I mean, there's I've put LED lamps in all of mine, which cuts the power consumption down quite a lot.
If anybody ever wants to see something that just stuns you, if you've got one of the older ones, Carl, just pick the board up and take a picture and send it. The amount of wiring in there is like something out of
they all are like that. Mine are like that.
How many connections are there wire in there? Like 500?
And by the way, they're all bespoke.
Yeah.
Every one of them is hand soldered.
That's unreal.
And I know how to fix them, which is the only, I mean, God forbid if you have a collection and you don't know how to work on them, because if you call somebody like me to come over there, got money?
Well, those guys made a good living in the day when those things were in the bowling alleys.
Well, there still are, in some of the bars and stuff around here, there's still machines. But fixing them is absolutely a thing. They're not like video games where you've got three switches and a display.
Are you a shaker? You know just how much you can shake it before it tilts.
Well, you know, a little English,
a little nudge,
a little nudge here and there. Yeah, well, mine are set pretty sensitive, so if you get abusive at all, you get tilted.
For those that don't know what the hell we're talking about, if you shook the machine too much, there was a ball. In like this metal thing, and if the ball hit the metal thing,
it's actually a plumb bob.
Well,
it's a lead weight that's triangular, so the operator can set how far up or down on the rod it is, and it's in a circular orifice. If it touches the side, it tilts the game.
So you lose your quarter, and you don't win.
Well, you lose your ball.
Yeah.
Okay. Now there's a second switch. There's a second set of switches. There's one on the play field. There's one on the coin door that's called a slam switch. If you do that, the game resets.
Okay.
But you got to abuse it pretty hard to get that one to go off.
God. But, I mean, we're talking about where we are all headed in this whole mess.
To hell.
And yeah, I don't see why. But now the big fight. The whole idea is, if all of a sudden people, the money just comes out of nowhere, I don't know how many people actually care, right? I think they all care. I don't know what they, but that all of a sudden people can make these deals and none of these things are laws. No, nobody seems to put the money out there. I mean, we had, you know, Wayne talking yesterday about CIA fronts in different places. And
yeah.
Is it kind of, I actually believe in the system. And I think that our system is what sets us apart. If nobody cares about it, what are we doing? Should we all move? I mean, what's the deal?
Well, where are you going to move to?
I don't know. There's got to be some place, but
Chief, that's one of the problems. Is you say, well, you know, I'm just going to abscond and buy. Find a better choice. And this is my argument has always been that if we end up having to have another revolution kind of event here in the United States, so be it. I really hope that doesn't become where this has to go. But that, in my opinion, is better than the other alternatives, because I don't think you can find a better choice.
Well, you know, there was a...
Run away is a losing strategy.
Big article in CNBC the other day about how many Americans are leaving the country.
Oh, yeah, I know.
And, there's a lady here in our industry, when I say in our industry, in my industry, she was, I guess I'll tell the story since I started it. If you use a firm that knows what they're doing, like PTI, and you want to do a covered right, okay,
mm-hmm.
Say you want to buy IBM at whatever, 250. Well, it's 259 now after the government made their investment yesterday. You want to buy it at 260 and you want to sell the 265 calls for $5, whatever the price is.
Right.
You can either leg it. You can buy the stock and then go around trying to sell the calls, or you can bring both of those. You can put the order, the covered right, and say, I'll buy the covered right. I'll pay 250 and I want $5. I'll do it for a 245 net. So a real firm doesn't go out on a limb on one of the trades and hopes to catch the other, you know.
Yeah, and hope the other one clears.
But
right.
I mean, try and do that through, you know, whatever. So,
right.
But if you were still on the trading floor, you now have to that trade has to take place on some exchange. Back when they had exchanges, but the New York Stock Exchange would never do that. Okay, they would never cross an order, so you had to go to a regional exchange, and the one here was the Midwest. It became the Chicago Exchange.
Right.
And people had specialist groups there, but they would allow you to cross the order for, you know, whatever, a tenth of a cent a share or something real cheap. But it was good for them because there was no risk. You just crossed it. They knew the buyer and the seller, and it went. So this lady, I won't mention her name, was renowned. She did a great job for years and years and years. And then she finally retired, and she's trying to move to Ireland. She can't find a place. I don't know if she has her citizenship. I don't think it makes any difference, but there's nothing for sale that you can snap up. Everybody that can wants to go. I mean, I'm not saying everybody, not zillions of people. It doesn't take zillions. It takes, you know, if 10,000 people want to move into Ireland and buy a house, it's a problem, right?
Yeah. Well, that's, but, you know, Chief, one of the things that I've always found astounding, and I've warned people about this many times, when all the crazy was going on, there was a gold rush kind of mentality around here when it comes to cabins in the Smokies.
Okay? Oh yeah, and, or Wyoming, or Idaho, or wherever you want to go.
Well, and it was simply it was very specific to this area for that kind of experience, and the reason was we were open and everybody else was not. If you wanted to go into Asheville and do the same thing...
You're talking about COVID.
You couldn't go into a bar and get a beer because the bars were forced closed. Okay? If you wanted to have a drink, you had to be outdoors. Then they started doing this vax passport and all this other crap. And so everybody came here because our establishments were open and I mean, you know, if you're scared, stay home. But if not, well, guess what? Come on down here. So as a result, supply and demand tells you exactly what's going to happen to price, right?
Yeah.
You know, all the people from four states decide to pile into the northeast corner of Tennessee. And gee, I wonder what's going to happen to the overnight room rate in, you know, in Airbnb cabins. So the price skyrockets. So you got these places that were, you used to be able to get them for a week for $1,000. Now all of a sudden they're $4,000. And everybody and their brother that is in California and in other, especially California, where of course Newsom had locked down the entire effing state.
Yeah, yeah.
And so those people that had short-term rentals out there all start piling into here. And of course, you know, the bidding wars got ridiculous. And I had some friends of mine that were looking at, you know, doing, was it 1031? I think it was a 1031 exchange. remember the exact section, but basically it's property exchange where you don't have to pay tax on capital gains because you're in the same category. And I told him, I said, look, this is a lovely place. I love living here. I said, if you pay what these people are asking for, you're going to get your head cut off because this will end. I don't know when it will end. I don't know when Asheville is going to stop being stupid. I can't tell you when North Carolina is going to do that. I can't tell you when parts of Georgia are going to do that. What I can tell you is it will happen. And when it does, then the people who would who think hillbillies are stupid, and I want to be with the green-haired people that inhabit Asheville. That's their preferred place to vacation. They're going to go back there.
Well, that's true.
And that's exactly what happened. All right, so now you look around the real estate market here, and you got all these people trying to get these insane prices, and nothing's selling.
No, it's a...
All right.
I'm going to ask a question, and while Kevin's still here. You know, Kevin, we've talked on the show, and a lot of what our themes are is we want to get some of the knowledge and some of the things that, you know, you're teaching that I see in my industry. Obviously, Carl has a boatload of knowledge on a lot of stuff. We try and get it out to people because it appears that the truth is kind of but a concept. In the last month or so, and I don't know if it's because of there's more fighting going on in a bunch of different places, or maybe some people are just... I really do think that on some level, maybe it's just the representative level, I don't know about the Senate level, but the feedback from people to our representatives, it's not zero. You know, I don't know if it's as much as it ought to be, but it's something there. And I've kind of noticed in the last few weeks, there's some pearls of truth coming out of people that I never thought I was stunned when I don't know what she does, but she's one of these state treasurers. I think she might be a state treasurer. She goes, the taxes in Illinois, property taxes for the last 30 years have gone up twice the rate of inflation, or she say three times. And I never thought I'd hear somebody say that. Now, the other day, Pritzker was at the Rivian. My brother and his a lot of people invest with him. They were in all these electrical trucks and all stuff. He knows all about the stuff I don't. But I mean, I've seen a couple of their trucks. They're pretty damn nice. Evidently, they're $75,000. I didn't know that. And these are all electric. And they just came out with, and Pritzker was down there at the place, they're coming out with another version that's $45,000. It's like the Rivian for every man. So Pritzker goes, this is sort of like when Henry Ford came out with the Model T. It's where anybody can afford it. And he caught himself instantly, and he goes, wait a minute, most people can't even afford $45,000. I think I said that, right? Some pearl of truth piled out of his mouth.
Yeah.
It's starting to pile out even at this level. I mean, I think you're seeing it with...
Slip out is what you're saying.
Slip out. But, I mean, even with this stuff going on the last week with this thing with, the $1.7 billion towards God knows what for paying people. And the backlash from both sides that you're seeing...
Instantaneous
from both sides. Where you've got guys that have been Republican forever going, my people won't put up with this. I mean, somehow or another, maybe some of the stuff we're talking about is finally percolating, and maybe we can have a debate on someone. Am I being too crazy hopeful here because it's Memorial Day weekend or what?
Well, it did blow up a deal last night or yesterday.
It did legislatively.
What was the deal? Explain that one.
They're going to do the reconciliation package.
They went home.
And a lot of Republicans said, unless we get rid of that fund, we ain't voting for it. And so they're all going home today.
Yep.
Ooh, wow, I didn't hear that. Thank you, Kevin.
Yeah, no, they adjourned. And, I mean, of course, it's not really adjourned because then the president could make recess appointments. So they're, they're playing that game like they always do. But nonetheless, they said F you and walked out rather than voting on it.
I think that a lot of this stuff is really kind of coming home to roost on the population. And I'm not just accusing this guy. I think somehow or another, when you end up in Washington, you can lose touch of what's going on with regular people. And, I mean, the more I read about Roosevelt, is the more he got as many possible ways where people could get to him with information and didn't just rely on the people around him. I don't think a lot of people don't do that. I don't think Carter did that as well as he should have. I don't know about Reagan. Maybe in his first term he did. I don't think the feedback and the stuff that I heard from the used car dealer yesterday, I'm not buying any more cars. I can't sell them. Okay, then. You know, I don't know if that's just one neighborhood, like Kevin said. I don't know how broad that is.
No, I don't think so, Chief. I mean, there's an awful lot of stuff sitting around here, and I have a friend of mine that he's in the market for a heavy-duty truck, but he's just not going to pay what they're asking.
Well, a real nice one's what, 90?
Yeah, he's like, you guys are on drugs. Okay, and this is a guy that has a fair amount of experience, and he works in collision. Okay, he's one of the guys that fixes a car after you get hit.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And so he also knows how they're put together. And, you know, and I've pointed out to him, I said, the big problem is not just there. It's also all the electronics and everything else, which are single source. And if something goes wrong with them, I can't go, you know, I can't fix it for you because I can't get the part other than from the dealer.
Well, Kevin, what did you were on the day when Kenny was on? What, his wife got rear-ended in his new, wasn't a Mercedes, but it was a one of the high-end Japanese models. And it wasn't total, but it was like $25,000. And it took, Kevin, what do you say, 6 weeks for all the parts for the backup cameras and all the other sensors and all the stuff to...
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
I mean, it's incredible. I mean, I mean, 2-3 weeks in a body shop to fix a door now is the norm, right?
It's just the other problem is, let's say that you just have a very pedestrian thing happen. It's not even a collision. Just for the sake of argument, you're going down the road and a rock comes out of a gravel truck and busts your windshield. Okay, pretty common thing. It happens all the time, right? Okay, so you go and you get the glass replaced, and then you have to spend $300. You take the vehicle over to the dealer and spend $300 because the sensors that are behind the glass, you can't recalibrate them.
Right.
You have to, and the only person that has that tool is the dealer. And by the way, they've got patents on everything and they've locked it down. So the secondary shops, the glass shop can't buy the tool.
Which is how
illegal to me.
That's
more than a little, but Kevin, nobody goes to jail.
That trick's been around. They had examples of that when I was in college of people. That's one of the oldest trick in the book, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, but okay. So here's the other good one. You know, starting, if they ever manage to figure out how to allegedly do it, one of the things that Biden got into the law is this requirement that your car watch you, and if it determines that you're incapable of driving, refuse to start. Now the mad people all ought to be guillotined for this.
Oh, yeah.
Because
oh, yeah,
they're the ones who advocated for it.
Yep.
Here's the problem with this. It's not that I like drunk driving. Okay, don't get me wrong. I'm not advocating that people drive when they're smashed. And yes, it's a real problem. And yes, way too many people die because someone's drunk. And
yeah, we don't care how many places we give people gummies now. We don't care about that.
Well, but allegedly, this thing would detect. It's not just alcohol based. Okay, it detects impaired driving. All right, here's the problem. I'm a woman. I just got assaulted by my domestic partner. I come racing out of the house. I get in the car to flee from a guy who's going to kill me. And the car determines that I'm incompetent to drive and won't start.
You're incompetent to drive not because you're impaired for drugs or alcohol. You're incompetent because you're just so damned up fat.
Or you got punched in the nose, or you got punched in the eye.
Well, yeah, I just got swatted or you know, I just got raped or whatever, right? And I'm extraordinarily distraught, and I get in the vehicle, and it won't start. Now, the guy comes out and shoots me or, you know, takes an axe to my head or whatever. All that happens one time, just once, and you know it will, Or here's another one. I'm in the middle of the national park, and the guy I'm hiking with, or my girlfriend or whoever, gets mauled by a bear.
Oh, God.
All right. Now, I can't call for help because I have no signal, but I have a car. I am completely emotionally wrecked by what just happened. I'm in one piece, but whoever I'm with is literally going to die if I can't get them to the ER.
Well, Carol, the simple stuff, though, what is... When you get
but Chief, how what error percentage is acceptable in a situation like this? And the answer is zero.
Zero.
All right. Now there are plenty of instances where you may be impaired in terms of your capacity to operate the vehicle, but your operation isn't unlawful. All right. And the first time that this happens to somebody, and someone, either they or someone they love, dies, I am fully in support
you don't have to worry
of
about
every
it.
Single person being dragged out of their
no,
offices,
but you don't have to worry about that.
Signed this bill and voted for it, and executed
it'll be
in the middle of the public square.
It'll be 5 or 6 years before it comes to trial. You don't have to worry about it.
No, it won't be 5 or 6 years. It'll be 5 or 6 minutes before I go find the congresspeople that voted for this and kill their wife or child because
a lot
they
of it,
deserve it.
A lot of it is what... A lot of it is what people want. I mean, my
Chief, how many people want that?
Well, okay,
what they were sold.
They don't want that, but my...
No, what they were sold was a lie.
Let's just say there's a schism between what people are looking for in a vehicle between the young lady who's on money, who happens to be my significant other, and, say, me.
Oh, trust me. Look,
I mean, if the thing doesn't have 48... heaters and this and that and the other thing, and I go, odd. I want a regular seat.
Yeah.
I don't want 15 motors under there sourced from some goddamn place that if my seat doesn't work, it takes me 3 weeks before I can drive it. I don't want any of that stuff.
Chief, I have a friend of mine that just bought a brand new vehicle. Okay. It's very nice. It has a wonderful ride. It's nice and quiet inside and everything else, and it would drive me effing bananas.
Her late cousin Eddie told me that some of the newer cars had 30 computer chips running the heater for the seat, the heater for the steering wheel.
Chief, one of these,
it's unbelievable.
This one, you can't adjust the air conditioning without using the touch screen.
That's unbelievable.
Well, you know, okay, now think about that. People talk about distracted driving. I can get in my truck or my Mazda, and I don't have to look at the controls for the air conditioning to change them because they're knobs. I can modify the setting by feel, so I don't have to take my eyes off the road. If you have to use the touch screen, you got to look at it.
Well, one of Audrey's pals, we go out to dinner, it's her new car. So she's,
this is, by the way, in the lean world, is called overproduction. It is putting things into the product that don't add value to the customer, or in this case, actually have negative value to the customer.
Well, they have plenty of value to the manufacturer when it breaks, though.
Well, this is I'll tell you how much of a Luddite I am in this particular truck I have. It's the high end for the year, right? It's nothing like a new one today, but
yeah,
it's got this, you know, the power seat, 15 times adjustable, all this kind of crap.
Yeah.
Well, last week I get in it, and like a dummy, I must have been taking something out, and I hit a button on there that evidently was set from the guy who must have owned it 20 years ago. All of a sudden, the seat moves in its direction. I go to sit in there, I go, it's been a week and a half, and I cannot get it back to the spot where I was comfortable. I play with it every time I get in there. I'm like, why don't I just have the lever up and back? Those things were all fine.
Well, my truck's an 02, okay? And at the time, it was the, you know, it was the top trim.
The XLT okay. version.
Yeah, it's the LT.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so I mean, it's got the leather seats, it's got the multi-way power, and two settings, the, you know, memory settings for where the seats are, and dual zone climate control, you know, that stuff, right? But and I thought that was a little overblown, but I was like, you know, I'm probably going to keep this thing for the next 20 years, so I don't care. Well, as it turns out, I'd have. So there you go, right? I mean, it looks like hell because the sun has trashed the paint, but it still runs great. Why the hell would I get
You think
rid of
people
that?
Would... Kevin, if you walked into class and they said, okay, here's a new car or truck, and you put a huge basket of all the little motors and all the different sensors and all the things that are there and said, this is what you just bought, and by the way, every one of them better work or you got a problem. What do you think people would think?
I do that all the time. Even stupid little things. How often have you been behind a car that had its turn signal on, and it has this nice thing where it sort of gives you the visual effect of the turn signal going from right to left or from left to right?
Yeah.
You've all seen that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
What value does that add to the driver who can't see it?
Zero.
What value does it add to the person behind you compared to just a normal turn signal?
Nothing.
Well,
it's in the car. It's something extra that'll break. And when the turn signal isn't working and you go to have it repaired, like you said before, Carl, it just creates an expense. Right. We do stupid stuff on purpose.
Well, they do stuff like this and to some extent, you know, some of this is tolerable to a point, right? But this thing with detecting impaired driving or attempted impaired driving and preventing it, if you think about this, Kevin, how many people get in a car every single day? Okay, how many trips do
oh,
you
it's,
think?
Oh, it's huge.
It's got to be 100 million a day, right?
Yeah.
All right? Every single time, you know, I go down to the grocery store and I buy my food and I get back in the car and drive home. Okay, that's two decisions the vehicle has to make. Not one, it's two, right at each end. Because every time I get in and turn the key, it's got to make this decision. All right. If the error rate is 1 in 10,000, you are going to screw tens of thousands of people every single day.
Oh, without a doubt.
Now, this is the kind of thing that, you know, nobody, of course, oh, well, you know, if we prevent one drunk driving death. Well, listen, I can, as I've said, I can solve probably 90% of the bad driving and aggressive driving that we have in the United States. I can solve it in 15 minutes with one law. Airbags and seatbelts are banned, and you must have a 6-inch spike in the center of the steering wheel pointed at your chest.
That'll do it. Well, yeah, but some of the stuff, you wonder how much, when I see people talking about, you know, it's funny, when I was 16, I had my driver's test on my day, on my birthday. I mean, that's how much I...
Yeah, well, so did I.
Yeah, I mean, one of the driving tests was learning how to parallel park.
Yeah.
And I said to the guy, what if people don't ever have to parallel park? He says it's an incredible discovery method whether somebody really knows how to drive, because you have to do so much things.
Right.
So now when I see stuff like the car that will parallel park itself, does that mean that the driver can't? And if he can't, what else can't he do? I mean,
what else can't he do is just drive.
Yeah, well, because when I first got this one, a real brief story, talking about the sensors, Kevin might have heard this before. I take my truck in to get, you know, of course, I go online and I schedule it online, which is pretty something for me. I'm supposed to go to the Firestone place at 3:30. So I'm there at 3:25. I was like, all right, we'll get you right in. I'm sitting there, and there's a ball game on, so I'm not...
Oh, you told this story.
I'm there for an hour and a half, and the guy's all he's doing is bitching about how their new machine they just bought, $500,000 they spent for the thing, they can't take care of this guy's new Toyota.
Right.
To where they're going, they got to send him back to the dealer, and whatever it costs, he's probably going to charge you $300, we'll pay for it, blah, blah, blah. So I figure, all right, I'm out of here. I go out the door, my car's on the rack, and I go, what are you doing? You just said the machine's broken. Ah, it's not broken for your truck. Your truck's easy. It turns out the guy's sensor on the Toyota went off and said his alignment was off. He goes, we got on the machine. There was nothing wrong with the guy's alignment. But we couldn't reset the sensors.
Right, right.
Now, I would hope that everybody who drives, and I'm going to say nobody knows this probably today, how do you test your alignment? Well, you probably can't get the technical toe in a little bit, something like that. But by and large, you find a flat piece of pavement. You go 20 yeah. miles an hour, and you take your hands off the wheel, and if it goes one side or the other, you got to get it away. How many people even know that now?
Like nobody.
Nobody.
Right. Well, and the other thing is, it has to be a flat piece because
yeah.
most roads are crowned.
Well, if it isn't, then you know it should yeah. turn to one way or the other.
Right, right, right. But yeah, but this is the thing. You know, we've gone, it's the same thing with the emissions nonsense. All right, we solved 99% of the emissions problem when the oxygen sensor was invented and we had closed loop control of combustion. All right, that by the way, Bosch invented that thing. That hasn't changed in all the years since. They've got better resolution ones in the brand new vehicles. They're called wideband. They have a wider range of reading and they're faster to respond. But the basic principle of how all automotive engines, gas engines, work has not changed one iota since then. And it used to be, Chief, you remember this, Kevin probably does too. Back in the 1970s, when catalytic converters first came out, you could not park your car on top of combustibles, like dry grass, because they ran hot.
Pulling the leaves in the street in Beverly, your car would go up.
Your car would light on fire, right. And the reason was that there was no closed-loop control of mixture. And so what ended up happening was that the catalytic converter, because it had an excess amount of fuel in the exhaust, got extremely hot burning it off. Well, it gets plenty hot now. It has to be hot in order to work, all right? However, not that hot.
Not that
and the
hot,
reason
yeah.
is the mixture isn't allowed to go out of range like that anymore. And that was also the reason, originally, to put oxygenates in gasoline. Originally, MTBE, which is a horrible environmental poison, and then they used ethanol to replace it. Because the people are pigs, and you know, and they have been.
Kevin probably wouldn't necessarily recognize it, but if you really go back in the day and watch like an old train come by, like in the 50s.
Oh yeah.
If you see, my brother Dan, president of PTI, used to work for, wasn't Union Tank? It was the other guys, ICX. Whatever the guys made the tank cars. Anyway, every tank car that you see. They're all for a different purpose. They're really specialized.
Oh, yeah.
And, well, the ones, the real small ones would come by and they looked like they were armed tanks. Those were the tetraethyl lead.
Right.
Because that stuff, is it the most poisonous thing other than...
It's hideous.
It's like
yeah.
it's like Botox. You know, it's that poisonous.
Well, that was there to a large degree as an anti-knock ingredient, but also to prevent valve seats from being eroded over time.
This is long before you had really the good oil and you know whatever. But those, you know, they used to get rid of those things. They'd fill them up with concrete and dump them in the ocean.
Yeah, I believe it.
This stuff is so because how much tetraethyl lead did you need in a tank of gas? It was like it wasn't even a thimbleful, was it?
A tiny little bit. Yeah, yeah. yeah
it but it, but it upped your amount. It upped your octane from
right.
say 89 to the car. I had a 65 Oldsmobile. You needed it had a 10.25 to 1 compression ratio. I don't know what all that means now, but at that compression ratio, you need like 94 octane.
Yeah, otherwise it detonates.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, so now
I'm Chief, the other thing too. Is that the now, and again, this is all the way back to the late 1990s, or right around 2000, now all of your automotive engines have knock sensors.
Yeah, they adjust for the octane on its own.
Well, they pull the timing back, so there's a piezoelectric sensor that screws into the engine, and it is tuned to the frequency that detonation makes. And so the computer actually hears the pinging.
What's her name say the movie 1.5 degrees balls positive or something on the timing, Marissa
yeah.
Tomei.
Well, I mean, I'm old enough that I had to set the timing and the dwell with a timing light, and a meter.
Do they even have the timing marks on the engines anymore? I bet they don't.
No, it's still there. TDC is still there generally. Has to be because there's times that, you know, if you're working on the valve train with the timing chain or the belt or whatever have you, you have to be able to line everything. So those that that indication typically is there. But yeah, the you know, the okay, you know, here's every, you know, every degree out to like, you know, 20. No.
Hey, we got to go to break. Come back. Let's talk about not just the market here. I mean, we've seen, you know, how it continues to move forward here, at least in some narrow areas. But I just want to talk a little bit, Carl, about how, I mean, if Kevin's still with us, about how because of so much of the wealth in this country now, in my opinion, is in the market and is in houses and so forth, the liability, should it drop, is more than I think I've ever seen. I mean,
well, it's coming too.
But I want your opinion. S&P futures up 25, Nasdaq futures up 100. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
How would you like to save money on nearly all your prescription drugs? We've set up a special toll-free number for the RX Outreach Program. They're a nonprofit company whose mission it is to make prescription drugs more affordable to the masses. They don't take insurance, and in many cases, your prescriptions are even cheaper than your co-pays. They carry thousands of different prescription drugs, so whatever you're taking, there's a good chance they have it. No coupons are required, and this is not a discount card. It is pure savings on your prescription drugs. They specialize in generic meds for any chronic health needs you have. Call with your prescription and find out for free how little you can pay for your prescription drugs. Remember, we don't take insurance, so call right now.
800-586-9885. 800-586-9885. 800-586-9885. That's 800-586-9885.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, Northbound Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Ricky on the board. SP futures up 25, NASDAQ futures up 102. Individual stocks, we've got IBM up again today, $5. It was up huge yesterday with the government. I don't know, maybe Carl knows the actual details on that, but it was something about $1 billion invested somehow in there. And I just picking winners again. It's not my world, but evidently it's the new world. Here's a headline this morning. Trump said he'd remember companies that didn't apply for tariff refunds. Many of them are applying for tariff refunds anyway. We'll talk about that after the break too. I can't even begin to know what we're doing with this mess. Over in Europe, we've got the what other stocks we've got. Oh well, yesterday again, Carl, put this on your list of the answer. Doing the show yesterday, and we have a big slug of Microsoft in the company that our clients have, and stock was up $12.50 at one point yesterday during the show, and I went and rustled up a little breakfast after the show before the opening. My brother goes, yeah, it's down $3. Must have been up 12, up 2, up 4, up 10, 6 times between right before the open, between 8 and 8:30, and then all of a sudden it's down on the day. This stuff is nuts, the way this is moving around. I mean, people keep saying, I keep saying that, but it's not the sign of a healthy market, or at least the sign of a healthy market fabric. Let's put it that way. DAX up 281, 1.1%. FTSE up 40.4%. CAC around up 59.7. Over in Asia, we've got the Asia Pacific markets trade higher as investors assess U.S.-Iran peace deal diplomacy. Nikkei is up $1,600. Wow, that's 2.7%. 63,239. We've got the Hang Seng up 219.8%. Shanghai up 35.8%. That's a pretty good move for Shanghai. Yesterday, again, we were just as a little bit of a review here, because even though we were up and down a couple of times, my machine is a tad blocky here today. S&P was up 12, NASDAQ was up 22 after being up more and then down a few times. Bonds, and here's where kind of the story is. Actually down 3 basis points on the 10-year, but still 4.55. Japan, 2.76. And when we look at FX, and here's the key number. Japan is 159 to the dollar. 160 is kind of their panic point. And if they decide to add dollars and buy up yen, which is what they do, they probably are going to have to sell off some U.S. treasuries to do it. That's a problem, okay? Again, now we're under 116 on the euro, so the dollar is near a six-week high. British pound's 134. So we're talking about percent and a half moves in those things over the last 2-3 weeks, which, again, is a lot. Gold, down $14, 45.27. Silver down 44 cents, 76.28. Last and maybe least, Bitcoin down $1.90, 77,371. Very steady in his high 70s number for the last few weeks. Ricky, what do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
Hey, good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:35 here in Chicago. We're looking at 51 degrees right now with a high of 64. Mostly cloudy and breezy today, and tonight will remain cloudy with a shower late and a low of 54 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 73 degrees right now with a high of 98. Warm with plenty of sunshine, and tonight will be clear with a low of 72 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, there's no major accidents reported this morning. Most expressways are moving at posted speed, except for some small patches of congestion. Inbound Kennedy from Montrose is 14 minutes, 28 minutes inbound Edens from Lake Cook, Eisenhower from Wolf is 22 minutes, 22 minutes, Dan Ryan from 95th, and another 22 minutes inbound Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan. Sports, the Diamondbacks are doing pretty good. They beat Rockies 2-1 yesterday and are 7-3 over the last 10. Today, Astros at Cubs at 1:20 p.m. We also have Rockies at Diamondbacks at 8:40 p.m. And lastly, Sox at Giants at 9:15 p.m. For the NHL East Conference, finals started yesterday. Canadians beat Hurricanes 6-2. And today at 7 p.m., we have West Finals Game 2. Golden Knights at Avalanche, Vegas with the lead. NBA, yesterday, Knicks dominated the Cavaliers, win 109-93, and take the 2-0 series lead. Today, West Finals Game 3, Thunder at Sports at 7:30 p.m., series tied 1-1. That's all I got for you, Chief. Back to you.
Carl, before we dig into all that other stuff, you know, this weekend is Memorial Day. And if I can, I'm going to swing by the cemetery because my uncle died in World War II. I never met him, obviously. You know, it doesn't bother me so much if people have Labor Day sales and 4th of July Day sales. I mean, it's our country's birthday. I don't really like the idea that people use the Memorial Day stuff for advertising. For God's sake, these are for people that died. Or is it just, am I just being grumpy or what?
No, I've had a terrible problem with this both directions, in that we have Memorial Day, and then, of course, we also have Veterans Day. Okay,
totally different deals. What are for
they
people?
They are not the same thing. Okay, yeah. You know, Veterans Day is for the people who went and came back, and Memorial Day is for the people who went and didn't. I think those are different. Maybe I'm a fuddy-duddy on this, but I don't think so. I get it. You know, any good. These days, what is it? Any good excuse to not have to go to work, right?
Yeah.
Okay, to be fair, did I like the fact that Kroger stuck brisket on sale for $2.99 a pound? Whole packers? Yeah, I like that a lot. In fact, there's one sitting in my fridge that's going to go on the smoker.
Okay.
Well, I mean, you know, there you go. But
we don't have any Krogers around anymore.
I'll tell you what, the funny thing is, it's not national, because I have a bunch of people on my forum, of course.
Didn't they bought somebody, though, that's here?
Well, there's. They tried to buy Albertsons, but I think that got killed.
They bought Mariano's.
Yeah, it's.
Several Krogers over where I.
Yeah, you guys still have them. They left Chicago like 40 years ago.
Yeah, the thing that's. Well, that's. You know, that was the Jewel and whatever wars.
Dominic's.
Yeah.
Hung arm against them.
Yeah, you know, there's a little Armageddon there. You know, Chief, interestingly enough, the commercial you guys just ran on this last break with this thing with the drugs, did you see what CVS has been doing?
Did we talk about it? Tell me about it.
So, CVS...
They own the pharmacy benefit manager, too, right?
Correct. They're right. So apparently what they're accused of, now I've dug a little bit into this and it appears to be true, but we'll see how this plays out. There are all kinds of crooked games that go on when it comes to how drugs are priced in the United States. I talk about it a lot. One of the distortions is that if you have something going on and you go get a prescription for some rare condition in a hospital as it's being treated, that there is a kind of like a second list that essentially gives you a crack off the cost. Okay. And this has nothing to do with insurance. It's one of the distortions.
Well, CVS figured out how to capture that and steal it. Now, the problem with this was the disparate pricing, the way this was being capitalized, and this goes to the general crookedness of the medical system in the United States. This disparate pricing was not actually of benefit to the patient.
Oh, no.
The hospital was using it to pay for indigent care for people like illegal immigrants. And CVS
found... That's what they said they were using it for.
They were probably pocketing.
Yeah.
Okay. But, you know, supposedly this is one of their, you know, their means of gaming the charity care thing, too, right?
Right. Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah. So
it doesn't
CVS,
sound so good to give it... We gave it to the chief executive in a bonus. Doesn't it sound so hot?
No, that would tend to generate a little outrage, yeah. Right? So, anyway, CVS found a way to basically play with this scheme, stick itself in the middle, and steal it.
God.
And we're talking about something like a third of the total amount of money spent on the drugs in this class during this period of time. So when this is not small, you know, this is not $50 here and there kind of stuff, right? Now there's people after them over this. They also were screaming because the state of Tennessee passed a law that banned pharmacy chains from owning PBMs within their borders. So if you want a business license,
yeah,
as
but
a
how,
pharmacy,
how do you stop CVS, which already has one?
They're going to have to divest it or they're out.
How do you divest it in one state?
Well, they said. They said they're going to leave Tennessee as a result of this because they can't make their money. Well, we'll see about that. We'll see if they actually do.
Well, I don't think they're going to divest it just for the one state. I don't know how you
can
do that.
Or they'll
find a workaround. They'll buy another drug company, a drug store.
Well, we'll see. Yeah, we'll see how that, you know, whether or not that ends up being, you know.
Well, we still have.
That being
well, let's talk a bit about the market here. Kevin, you know, for a long period of time, one of the reasons, I mean, me being in the industry, I think I understand how the markets work with regular people as well as anybody. I mean, it's been my life. I mean, obviously, Carl has stuff that he's terrific at. I wouldn't begin to try and teach one of your classes. I mean, we're all good at what we're good at, and that's why I think we enjoy talking to each other. But
yeah,
two things. One we've talked about in the last few weeks is when markets go up, there's a tremendous amount of leverage that usually piles in. And we're back.
Yep.
We're at a record now. So that's a problem. So in my experience, when markets go up and then they go back down, people lose more on the way down than they made on the way up. So that's why I don't like it to go up unless, obviously, if a company's going to make more money next year than this year and the stock goes up, that's good for everybody. Me, my clients, we love that. that's America, right? But you also have a situation with the last several administrations going back a ways and feds where people have the normal if you would have walked when I first started the business how many years ago, if you were to say, God, a guy's 80 years old, he's retired, where should he be invested in a quote normal world? You might say something like, well, 20% cash, he's going to make 3% on that, you know, 40% and maybe some bonds or fixed income, not out too far. I mean, you know, about 50 years if the guy's 80, but some kind of fixed income where he's making a decent return there, maybe even depending on his tax bracket, a couple of munis, and the rest in maybe some dividend paying stocks or, you know, or an area you like. That would be the normal deal. Well, that normal deal, nobody's got that. I mean, right. So you not only have margin being a little higher, but there's like this third type of, quote, margin that you don't even think about, where somebody maybe who's retired and has, you know, a lot of money in the market would never consider selling NVIDIA like at a new high and like paying off his house, where you might say maybe you should, you know, especially if it's just a chunk. Now, a lot of people's wealth is now in this, in quote, the market, whether it's in a 401k, whether it's in an IRA, whatever it is, and to the point where none of these old stuff need apply. I mean, I've had, you know, people who I talk to that don't become clients, because now it's a point where if there's not a match mentally, I really don't want the person, to be honest with you. I mean, it's not like I don't want them, it's just we don't match. And where somebody, oh no, I'm 90, but I want 90% of my stock in NVIDIA. I don't want to protect it. I don't want to do this or anything. I'm going, well, you know, okay, but
right.
You know, on my watch, by no stretch should you be 100% if you're not working. Now, if the guy is making $300,000 a year or something, and he's got 500 shares of NVIDIA or 100 shares, I'm not going to tell him to sell it. It's right. But part of what, it's not just the margin, Kevin, that Kyle and I always talk about. It's the people's risk reward does not match what it traditionally ought to be. So my concern is, if the market takes a dump, which is what I'm supposed to worry about, that's what I get paid to do, right, is to worry so other people don't have to. I mean, Kevin, you get paid to educate people so people don't, their parents don't have to do it because you're doing it. I mean, duh, that's what we do. So my concern is, if we take a 40 or 50% cut, which we have a couple times in my lifetime in the business, I think the damage is going to be way more damaging, way more severe than it ever would be at any other time since I'm in the business.
Well, that's why it's not going to be 40 or 50%. It's going to be 90.
Well, that's even worse. I mean, Kevin, what do you think? I mean, you're more in tune with... I mean,
first of all, I think that's a question that would make Chuck Kopic blush, because it took you about 5 minutes to get it.
Well, that's I get it. You know...
In fact, I'm not even sure, you know, what are you asking me? Are you asking me, you know, are a lot of people set up to, you know, who thought they were set up for retirement? Not.
Well, I mean, you don't, it's a little better now. I mean, for us it is anyway, because we've been able to at least, because, you know, we go to the Treasury auctions, we've been at least able to say if somebody's, you know, 80 years old, they might be 15% in Treasuries or something, where 2 years ago when Treasuries were 0.5%, nobody wanted anything in fixed income. So to a certain extent, we're much, I won't say better, we're much more matching of a traditional portfolio for people, especially retired, than we were able to do 3-4 years ago. It's still not like it was 30 years ago, where you had, you know, fixed income and the other stuff. But so we're, you know, we don't have people that are 95% out on their skis now. They might be 70 or 75, but still, it's not the traditional part. I mean, where people are happy now to go out and not pay cash for a car because they have all this money, quote, in the market. You know, I've got $2 million in the market. That's okay. I can run a credit card thing. I can have car payment. I can buy a boat because I have this thing over here that's making me 10-15% a year. And by the way, it's going to do that forever, and I never have any risk over there. That's the kind of danger I'm trying to explain here as best I can. That's why it's taking me so long, because...
Yeah, that's exactly the danger. And what I've explained to some friends of mine who are in my age bracket or approaching my age bracket, so, I'm 62, so I'm in that, pre-retirement / retirement area, right?
Yeah, you're closing in.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I make money. I still do things that generate revenue, all right. But am I doing things that generate the kind of revenue that I generated when I was 35? No. All right. And what I've explained to people is, that's to be out there like this is perfectly fine, right up until you allow your lifestyle to creep up.
Kyle, did you just put your head in a ash can?
Oh no, I'm sorry.
There you go.
I said it's perfectly fine, right up until you allow your lifestyle to creep up into where that has to be the pattern that sustains what you're doing. So if you go and you say, well, you know, I got $2 million in the market, I got my Social Security check coming in, but that $2 million is going up at 12%, I can take 10, and I'm fine, right? And you go out and get yourself a $2 million house and a $500,000 boat and a nice big fat RV. And all of a sudden you've got a $20,000 a month nut that you have to meet. Well, if you take a 50% loss in the market, and you don't immediately cut your expenditures when that happens, you're going to run out of money in 5 years. And by the way, you can't cut your expenditures because you've taken on these obligations. If you don't make the mortgage payment, they take your house back, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that to me is where the cascading risk in the economy is right now, because this is where we are. And I have friends of mine that are, you know, in this age bracket, and they are yucking it up every day because of this sort of thing. And then you have Microsoft's, you know, of course, their stock has been vertical, right? And a lot of people have large positions there. Maybe they didn't start with one, but it's large now.
The biggest life changer for most people was Apple stock middle class people.
Yeah, but you know, but Microsoft's another one of these, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And you know, and Nvidia's the newcomer with it, but you know, same
by the way,
thing,
it was 550 last year, and now it's 420.
Microsoft, well, yeah. But you did hear what their chief of artificial intelligence said 2 days ago, right? 2-3 days back.
Yep.
That all white collar jobs will be taken over by AI within not in 10 years, in 18 months.
Yeah, he is, by the way, full of crap. But
well, he's absolutely full of crap. But by the way, that is a blatant attempt to pump the stock. It ought to be a felony because it has no basis in fact. It cannot be defended as a factual statement.
It's a problem for me because I'm registered. If you're not, you can say whatever you damn well please.
Well, I Chief, I get that. You can't make a statement like that without FINRA coming up your ass.
Right.
Okay. You'd be tasting what they'd shove up the back door. This guy goes out and does this and rah, 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 rah. And I put up an article about this. I said, look, if he's, let's just assume for the sake of argument, he's full of crap. And I get into it with people that are extremely intelligent about this whole thing with artificial intelligence. I just had a conversation with somebody who's an associate of mine, an extremely intelligent person. You'd recognize their name. I won't use it because I don't want to do that. That they were doing some research on something completely non-market related, and so they asked one of these paid AI agent, because they, you know, they've got some money, they have commercial access to some of these things. They asked it a question, gave it a prompt with fairly specific, and what it produced was plausible, but it invented a particularly pertinent component of the answer. And they characterized this as a hallucination. And I pushed back on that hard, and I said, that's not a hallucination. If you go onto my forum and you go to the search box and you punch in something that isn't in the message base, make up a word that nobody has ever used and key that in as message contains.
Well, it's the name of a drug, because that's where words that nobody's that are made up.
Oh, no, just do supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Kevin, just do supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, okay?
All right. I'm just interjecting.
But I'm saying...
A bit of weird humor.
Yeah, but put that in the message as the message contains something that doesn't exist, and the system will come back instantaneously within a tenth of a second and tell you it's not there. Why? Because it doesn't have that in the corpus of information that it can examine, and it knows this. All right. The AI knew this, that it did not have the necessary information to produce the full answer instantaneously. It knew that. It knew it that fast. And yet, it bullshitted. And the reason it did is it had the rest of the information. And if it tells you it can't actually answer the question, you stop paying money.
Well, yeah.
Well, Chief, this problem's not solvable.
If you can't dazzle them with brilliance, you baffle them with bullshit?
Well, yeah, but here's the thing. If the AI came back in response to this prompt, knew it was missing a critical piece of information, which it did, and immediately said, I don't have the necessary information to answer the question, then it would consume no tokens, or maybe one token, because it got a cache miss immediately on the data. Okay? That's not what it did. It ground and ground and ground. It produced an answer, and it invented the piece of information to fill the gap. And the reason it did it is because it followed its programming. It didn't hallucinate anything.
So somebody told him to do that.
Well, but Chief, the prime directive is to consume tokens to make money. For every one of these systems, if you don't somehow justify the cost, the plug gets pulled out of the wall.
Well, the
a couple of add-on points, because we have listeners who actually used some of these tools or who, in some cases, work for places that use these tools. First of all, the idea, I talk to users right now who will tell me, I will not allow any AI analytical tool to AI-based analytical tool to do anything except look at my own data, because I know that's real.
It's a closed data set. That's fine.
That's right. Closed data set is exactly it. So that's part one, and then it proves to be a very useful, good productivity tool. And part two is, and this is one of my adjunct professors said this, and I think it's a really good way to look at it, is the fundamentals of any discipline where you might be using one of these tools are not being diminished in any way. They're more important than ever, because you got to manage this damn thing.
Yeah, but this is not, this problem is not going to go away.
No, it's not.
And the reality of it is that it's going to continue to get worse, because when you get down to it, the entire thing is a overwhelming, at the level being put forward, scam. And the reason it's a scam is because the actual addressable market, where the machine is essentially a data analyst against a closed data set, is a hundredth of what's being sold.
Well, it seems to me, and Kevin, we only got a few minutes, but two things. I wanted you guys to address the NVIDIA thing about Huawei, but how does...
Yeah.
It seems to me, and I'm a child compared to using the stuff that you guys are. It seems to me that every place now I go for information, or even wants to give me information, they're starting to put up these little blockages.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll get the headline from the Washington Post. Oh, wait a minute, you don't subscribe to the Washington Post, you can't read the article. Or wherever it is. You try and find something about the Los Angeles Dodgers, and all of a sudden there'll be an article with the Los Angeles Times. Ah, wait a minute, you didn't pay. So, I mean, how does these barriers seem to be gaining? How does AI blow through and read everybody else's stuff?
Well, okay, so there's circumventions that exist, which, by the way, are, they're illegal, okay, because you're violating someone's copyright when you go around those barriers, all right? But this is, this was the whole thing. It was with the Pirate Bay and, stolen software, stolen movies, whatever have you. And it's as old as the internet. I mean, hell, they used to break it up into little pieces and stick it on Usenet back when I was running my company. Because it's not a new problem. However, all of these AIs, and this is where we get into criminal conspiracy, because it's what it is. All of these AIs are going after those workaround repositories and hitting them. I've got. Fairly sophisticated means of preventing them from getting into my system. My system's very, and part of the problem is they get extremely aggressive in terms of trolling all the new stuff to grab it, because currency of information is is what they're selling essentially, right? But the publishers because of the, you know, so Google as an example, Google's made its money indexing other people's pages, right? I mean, that's what they have been as a search engine. That's how they got somewhere. They've destroyed the utility, the bargain, the implicit bargain with the publishers. And ultimately, this is going to fold back and destroy them as a company. And the reason is
this. You
mean
Google or the AI people?
No, Google.
Okay.
And by the way, this is going to apply to the other AI guys too, okay? Because and the reason it's going to destroy Google is because of what they've done. It used to be that when you went on and you Googled something, you got a set of hits, but the actual content wasn't there. So you clicked through to the original site to get right. the information. That was the bargain. That is the reason that website owners allowed Google to go in and index all their stuff. Because when you looked it up on Google, you were going to go visit that site's material and perhaps buy something. Okay? That's the bargain. Google has now violated that, that implicit arrangement, because they are grabbing, they're scraping the information and using their own internal AI to summarize it, which now means that the person who reads the summary doesn't really click the site.
When did they, Kevin, you remember this, when, how many years ago, I don't know, it's like before COVID was a different world, but when you used to Google something, say you Googled a Phillips screwdriver, well, on the left-hand side, there'd be all kinds of sites telling you what a Phillips screwdriver does, but on the right side, there'd be True Value and Home Depot. They separated out.
Right.
I mean, when did that end?
Into the paid search, you know.
Yeah. But now there's just one, and it's all the paid people.
Well, it's
paid people that, on top generally, and you know, I don't use Google very much, so.
What do you use?
I usually use Start Page.
What's that?
It's a search.
Engine, or are they like?
No! They've been around for a long time, Chief. Here's an interesting little piece of trivia: for a period of time, StartPage was on my infrastructure.
Well,
MCS.
Well, who are the guys that they don't pay attention? They don't remember any of your stuff, but they use Google. You're saying these guys have their own?
Oh, they all the places that say that are lying.
Okay.
Yeah. The difference is whether, you know, what do they filter out and what do they share? So Start Page will still show ads at the top of your page,
right.
and that's fine. But what they're not doing is they're not sharing off my search history.
But do they use Google or they use their own search engine?
Oh, I'm sure they embed Google in there.
Okay. So
yeah. So but they used to be completely separate though.
Well, there used to be what, like five search engines. Is there only one now, or does Microsoft?
The
have
others
one?
Have mostly died.
Does Microsoft have one? Doesn't?
Yeah, Microsoft has one.
Bing.
Is that any good?
Same description. Yeah.
Well, so all right. So you were asking about the
wait, Kevin. How do you spell that?
yeah. There you go. So you were asking about the Huawei thing, and I do want to get enough, you know, a little bit of commentary on that, because we're going to run out of time.
Yeah, well, we already have, but we're going over a couple of minutes for Memorial Day.
Well, so here's the bottom line on that. NVIDIA's chairman has admitted that they're essentially shut out in China. And the reason they're shut out in China is Huawei is, of course, a chip manufacturer in China. But they were always going to be shut out in China. This was one of the big cons that the government and NVIDIA ran on its investor base. The reason is that Huawei, being that they're based in China, is under direct control of the CCP and the PLA.
Did
and
they steal the stuff from NVIDIA, or is it all their
own stuff? Well, they stole some of it, but the important point is that the Chinese government wants their fingers in the code base on an all-the-time basis. So that if you talk about things you're not supposed to talk about, you can't get on a train, you can't fly anymore, your passport's been canceled, you know, all the stuff they do over there. NVIDIA, there's very little or no means of enforcement available to the Chinese government when it comes to NVIDIA, but there's plenty with Huawei, because Huawei is a Chinese company. And so there was never going to be the, by other than theft, to use to train up something that then runs on their own stuff, or to steal the intellectual property or whatever have you. That's the Chinese government model of everything.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was never going to change. But by God, you got a hell of a nice stock pump out of that with, you know. But NVIDIA's CEO has now admitted that they're essentially locked out of the Chinese market on AI stuff.
Well, did, if I knew what I was looking at, if I looked at Huawei stuff, would I say, wow, this looks just like the NVIDIA stuff or not?
Well, that and we lock them out. With regards to phone switches and things like that, which oh, by the way, is not a small thing. It was a absolute. We should have done it sooner, and we should have done it harder than we did. Okay, to put it bluntly, that we didn't do that is one of the huge national security failures of the last 20 years, and it was all done because it pumped the market and was you know, and this was. Not just Trump, but it certainly was Trump's first term, and also to Biden's as well, and Obama before him.
We got a dash, guys, but real quick, I'm going down to tomorrow. Audrey's cousin and her husband were buried down at the National Cemetery down in the Lincoln one, down by south of Joliet, by Elwood, yeah. Of all places. Well, when they had the burial service, these old guys come out and they, you know, they shoot the guns off and all that stuff, and it's really very impressive. They won't take any dough, right? So when we get down there, we're going to go to the VFW thing in Williamsburg or something, and that's where they come from. And we're going to have some lunch and, you know, leave a big fat tip and everything and see if we can contribute. But they have on the menu, Kevin, their special half pound burger is like $9.99, right? Well, you can get a double for $12.99.
Oh,
I'm
here
thinking,
we go.
I don't think I'm man enough for the double. There were times when you and I could have dropped that after a game of basketball or something. It had been like a bad habit, but I'm not so sure I'm man enough anymore. What do you think?
I think you're not man enough at all.
I'd do it.
and we won't expand that argument.
There's no way. There's no way you can order it and like take half home. I mean, you can't do that. Just saying.
No. You have to make a spectacle of yourself if you order it.
Yeah.
I would say go for it. Just make sure you have a barf bag with you.
When will I feel good again? Like next Wednesday or something?
Well, you got to be back on the air on Tuesday.
Yeah.
So
there you go. Remember the days, Kevin, where that would have been, give me two of those? that ship has sailed, eh? Anyway, S&P futures up 34, NASDAQ futures up 130. Guys, enjoy your weekend. Everybody remember what the weekend is all about, as we enjoy it, because a lot of people didn't come home. And by the way, as good as we have it, we wouldn't have it if those guys didn't do that, and ladies too. Back on Tuesday, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.